From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, your spirit guides. Happy birthday, by the way, to Joe Hawthorne from your girlfriend, Faith. Hope you have a great one, Joseph. Here's what's happening. After school religious clubs appear to be the next venture now of a national group that sought to install a statue of Satan outside two state capitals to protest Christian monuments on public grounds. The Satanic Temple contacted nine public school districts across the country this week alone, seeking to start after-school Satan programs. They're not being met with much enthusiasm. Now, to those who say that police officers never get convicted, well, listen to this story. A former Portsmouth, Virginia police officer has been found guilty of voluntary manslaughter in the fatal shooting of an unarmed man accused of shoplifting at a Walmart store. Stephen Rankin, 36 years old, faces up to 10 years in prison. Now, the prosecutors had sought a conviction for first-degree murder. It was reduced to voluntary manslaughter. Rankin shot an 18-year-old in the face and chest last year after a security guard accused the teenager of shoplifting. Prosecutors said the officer, who is white, could have used non-deadly force, noting that every witness but Rankin testified that the youth, who is black, had his hands up. A 19-year-old says he was fired from his job at a Jack in the Box in Bakersfield, California, after serving an Army veteran two free tacos. Alex Mesta admitted to previously giving several cups of coffee to the regular customer, but one night the teenager server decided to give the veteran two tacos, which retail for about 99 cents. He says the food items were left over at the end of the day. They were destined to be tossed out, but his actions were caught on store surveillance cameras, and someone from the corporation wasn't happy with what they saw. Mesta says he was fired for his actions. Corporation claims he had mishandled funds. Underwater, that's where the personal ratings for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump remain right now. More American voters view Clinton unfavorably than favorably, giving her a net negative rating of minus 11. Last month, she was underwater by 14. Now, that's still better than her opponent, Donald Trump. Only 36% of the voters have a positive opinion of him, and his net score is minus 27. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Ah, John, what a mess, huh?
Well, you talk about a tailspin, but this is, one of the things we've noticed about this campaign is that these tailspins, these peaks and valleys have been going on now for months. So I don't think you can put too much stock in these ratings or the prognosticators right now that are, 3 days ago, or 4 days ago, predicting that the race was even at 50-50. Now they're predicting that it's an 80% chance for Hillary to win the presidency. I think what you have is the Democrats put on a really good shoe, as Sullivan used to say. And, the propaganda campaign, you have to give them really high marks in terms of, taking these absolutely, extraneous issues and then turning everyone against Trump like he committed some kind of unpardonable crime of some kind, like treason, high crimes and misdemeanors for asking why, the wife of Khazir Khan didn't say anything. But the real issue, facing voters right now, when they can cut through the smoke, Trump's instability, Trump's, unfit to serve, the ripping that goes on daily by the president of the United States, breaking all precedent and protocol for a president to be just using, company time, basically, his last remaining months, basically, to discredit Trump. But here's what I think voters should really be looking at. Where's the economy right now? The Federal Reserve just said that we are not raising rates because the GDP is so low
flat
that the economy is teetering on recession. And many economists have said there's recession heading for 2017. What's Hillary's plan to fix this economy? It's more debt ceiling borrowing and more taxes. Higher taxes for the middle class, higher taxes for people that employ middle class people or lower class people. So there is no plan to fix this economy. And the danger of continuing the status quo for folks out there that's trying to figure out what to do in this election is to figure out, can the U.S. population afford to be in a lost decade? We almost are in a lost decade in terms of growth and prosperity. And can we continue this like Japan for another 25 years? Because if we continue doing exactly the same thing that we've been doing, we're going to get exactly the same results. The same thing is true with regard to the Middle East. I mean, you cannot dismiss the fact that there is more terrorism, there is more death, and there is more destruction in the Middle East. It's washing up in Europe. It's washing up in the United States. And if something isn't done to change to pivot and to change the current terrorism, counterterrorism strategy, which is not just going through surrogates like Obama does on the ground, pitting the U.S. against Russia and Iran and literally tossing out, this is the Hillary Obama profile, and I'm not saying this, I think people need to understand this. This is from a neutral point of view. It's the worst relations the U.S. has had with Russia since the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I know, John, I know, but I got to tell you, every day something different is happening with this presidential campaign. It is the strangest I have ever seen. And talking about strange, mixing human stem cells with animal embryos to create chimeras. Those creatures that have part animal and part human elements soon will be getting your funding, taxpayer funding, under a new proposal from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Now, next Wednesday, L.A. Marzulli will join us for a couple hours to react to this incredible story. Being overweight in middle age makes the brain age by 10 years, according to researchers at a college. They scanned 473 brains and found that the brain structure of overweight people, which normally seen in different situations, aged 10 years older than people who weren't. Let's check in with the expert on all kinds of health-related issues, researcher and author Christian Wild. This is a story I kind of thought was true. What do you think, Christian?
On its face, it sure makes sense because we've known for 50 years how fat and cholesterol clogs our arteries. So my question is, why should it be different with tissues in the brain? And is this white matter that they refer to, is that really amyloid plaque? They're not sure. The authors of the study say they need to do more studies. But I just read today two studies on how turmeric fights neurodegenerative brain diseases.
That's amazing.
Dementia and inflammation.
It fights everything, Christian.
It's overwhelming. Well, every day I'm inundated with new studies on miracle things that this spice does.
Well, the secret of all of this, lose some weight, stay healthy, and go to your website too, myheartbook.com. Up next, the Rocket Man joins us, David Adair, back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And the Rocket Man is back with us. David Adair, internationally recognized leader and expert in the field of space technology spinoff applications for industry and commercial use. He has worked as a research scientist in the fields of engineering, jet engine technology, rocket science. At the age of 11, he built his first rocket. At 17, he won the most outstanding in the field of engineering sciences from the Air Force. At 19, he designed a state-of-the-art mechanical system for changing jet turbine engines for the U.S. Navy. What an amazing story, David. Welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. It's good to have you here. And as we get into the program, there's many things I want to talk with you about, David. But over the last couple months, we have heard some very sad news that we wanted to give you our condolences, the death of your wife.
Yeah, that's it's been a real bear to handle. It actually took her 15 months to die with this condition, and we don't even have a name for it.
I want to take just a few minutes, if it's okay with you, to talk about
sure.
this, because nobody really can put their finger on just what is wrong, what happened to her, and how many other people could come down with this.
Well, she's patient one, and patient zero is a 12-year-old boy. Well, he's now 14, in Iowa, and he, like my wife, was just perfectly normal.
Is he the one they call the disappearing boy?
Yeah, it's rough. He on his 12th birthday, he was having a party, and he ate pizza and cheeseburgers like 12-year-old wouldn't. And next morning, he wakes up, and he never sees his thirst or appetite ever again. And it's not like, oh, well, he can drink something. No, they will die of dehydration. And you set a glass of water in front of them, and they cannot drink it. And people go, oh, it's psychological. It is not psychological. It is neurological. We have a working title. We is in myself in the Mayo Clinic, who's looking over Landon Jones.
That's the little boy.
Right. And he's, I think the article's titled, Why Doesn't Landon Eat? It's a disappearing boy. These, when you get this, it's just, it's like watching a movie. It just, it defines everything we understand about how the person's body goes through a losing weight process, and how this thing is just insidious. The power of what it's doing is amazing. It runs over the id like a freight train.
Jeez. And it's not cancer, David, right?
No, but it is, in a way, it is fatal. But what it is like I said, we don't have a name for it. We have a working title. It's called a dysfunctionality in the hypothalamus.
How long did your wife fight this and suffer with this?
I sat in an office chair on the side of her bed, and I stayed there for 525 consecutive days.
Oh, my God.
And then when she died, I tapped my fingers and closed her eyes. That was the last thing she saw.
Did she go peacefully?
She went from a really nice, healthy body, 5'7", 120 pounds. And when she died, she was 5'7", 58 pounds, and could still walk.
58 pounds?
58 pounds. That's worse than an Auschwitz victim.
And nobody knew what was wrong with her?
No, just we know there's something going on in the hypothalamus, but that's coming from the research work that Dr. Patterson has been doing at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. But my particular problem here in North Carolina was no one believed me. No, not one.
How could they not believe you? All they had to do was look at her.
Yeah, but they wouldn't. They go, it's something else. I said, it's not something else. They kept wanting to say, it's anorexia. And I went, what is wrong with you? It's not anorexia. She's 68 years old. Anorexia hits teenage girls that have been abused, and they aren't happy with their bodies, and the anorexia starts off. And this has, and even anorexia is drink water. There's only one organ in the entire body that controls thirst. Just one, nothing else. And that is the hypothalamus. It's about the size of an almond.
Yeah.
That's right below the thalamus, which people refer to as the cosmic egg. And the hypothalamus is hardwired through the body through the ninth cranial nerve called the vagus nerve. And it drives the body. It's in charge. It controls all the autonomous functions. It controls your blinking of your eyes, your blood pressure, your bowels, coughing, sneezing, burping. All that's controlled. Your sleep pattern is also controlled by the hypothalamus. It's a really powerful little thing. It's no bigger than an almond, but boy, it does a lot. It really drives the body like a driver in a car.
Did you two travel any place before she came down with this?
No. And the thing is, her and Landon Jones are 2,000 miles away, 53 years different in age, and we have no idea how this thing moves and how it transmits or what, you know, pathology.
Well, obviously, we think it's not contagious, or you would have come down with it, right?
Well, yeah, but we don't know. You know, it's fortunately, I didn't get it. And hospice people got really upset because they saw things happening they just couldn't explain. Joanna had there was such a problem with the feeding her in Mandan, something else happened. When they won't eat anything and their bodies in the stomach start growling so loud.
Well, they're starving to death.
Yeah, and you can hear it clear across the house. It's so loud. And the body screams for food, and they want absolutely nothing. They have no hunger pain.
No desire to eat, nothing.
Right, and no thirst. And
do they force themselves to eat?
No, well, they try, but they just can't.
They can't keep it down either, I bet. Right?
Well, actually, they can. Everything is somewhat functioning, but it's without continuous water in your body. You're just, the constipation is continuous. And there's just so much going on, and I was having such a hard time with the doctors because first thing they did when I brought my wife in, they locked her into a lockdown unit with the crackheads, meth heads, bipolar, manic.
Oh, they thought something was mentally wrong with her, right?
Yeah, and I told them, I said, it's not psychological, stop. It's neurological. And they, of course, they turned around and looked at me and said, who are you?
Who are you? Are you Dr. Adair or what?
Yeah,
right?
No, they said, they looked at me and said, you're just a spouse. Yeah, well,
just a spouse, right?
No, a little bit. You know, I've spent about 700 hours on the internet, the medical internet.
David, did you get any support from any medical practitioner?
Not a one, none. I went to 32 specialists.
My
and,
God.
You know,
that's a story all by itself.
It is. It's okay with me that you don't know about it. Okay, that's normal. That's human. You just don't know everything. Of course, some doctors disagree with that. But and then if you don't want to fool with it because it's unknown and you can't just pull stuff off the shelf and fix it, they don't want to deal with it. I can understand that. I'm not happy about it, but I can understand it. But then when they started attacking me, that's when they crossed the line. They and the way they attacked you is just incredible. All this stuff, nasty emails that they signed and dated. I have tape recordings of them saying stuff. The head of Duke, Dr. Joel Morgenlander of Duke, head of neurology. I had been trying to find a doctor to help me, and it was so desperate. And I went to the American Psychiatric Association, and they had 35,000 members. I told them, it's not psychological, but neurological. I need somebody to help me. And they sent out 35,000 emails in 1 hour. And we got one reply back, and it was a medical researcher, not a doctor that sees patients, but this researcher was at Duke.
So and, so with Landon, though, and your wife, two cases that you know of, what do you think this is? Is this occurring worldwide, do you think?
Yeah, it's starting to look that way, and it's like an old child's fable. Something wicked this way comes. This thing is trying to. I asked the pathologists, and I asked them, "Said, is this thing only going to affect two people?" And they went, "Oh no, it's trying to find its parameters."
Now, did they look under a microscope at the organisms or whatever virus or bacteria might be?
They tried. Well, it's not bacterial and it's not viral. It's something else.
What else can it be if it's not one of those two?
Well, that's the problem. We don't have diagnostic tools that can look at this thing. Dr. Patterson was able to track it down through the vagus nerve into the hypothalamus. And here's where it gets bad. It's subatomic. It's like...
It's that minute.
Yeah, you can't see it. We did...
And they replicate, I guess, don't they?
We went through about $1.2 million in tests with Joanna. And
sorry to hear this.
We did everything imaginable. Contrasting dyes, endoscopic colonoscopies, going through the GI tract, eliminating all that out of the way. Then we went into the contrasting dye MRI with the hypothalamus, and then we sliced it on the with the MRI.
Well, I got to tell you, our deepest condolences on that, David. Let's take a little break. I'm glad you and I had a chance to talk about this. And let's get into space. You're the rocket man. Let's talk about some incredible things that are going on with technology and try to get your mind off some of this for just a little bit. I'm George Norrie, our special guest for the next hour and a half, David Adair, the Rocket Man. August 27th, Asheville, North Carolina, the event of the century. Going to have some fun with our live event with some special guests. Ufologist Micah Hanks, William Forstchen, who's our guest Monday night, will be here to talk about EMP attacks and solar flares. And Joshua P. Warren, the paranormal investigator, joins us as well. There are 47 seats left on the lower level. So go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, click the picture of the Asheville, North Carolina event, and then the seats. Look for the date, August 27th. Pick out your own seats. And once those 47 are gone, it's up in the balcony for all of us. And welcome back to Coast, the Rocket Man is with us, David Adair. David, for those who are new to the program and haven't had an opportunity to hear you in the past with us, tell us a little bit about how you got started at such a young age, 11 years old, building rockets and getting involved in science. How did that happen?
I was looking at quantum physics, differential mechanics, and some of this applications, and I was I was 7 years old when I was I was born in Welch, West Virginia, in number 10 Pocahontas coal fields. And matter of fact, the movie October Sky,
yeah,
that's Homer Hickman. Homer was born 3 miles from me.
Ah, okay.
And so we looked at it. Each other said, must be something in the water. But I don't know. I just came in this world. I just understood this stuff. And the little librarian, about 80 years old, she saw me sitting in the corner, and she's looking at the title of the book. And she's going, what is a Mobius? And I said, let me explain that to you. And she goes, you understand this stuff? I said, yeah. Well, how many books have we got here? I think about 24 of them. And she said, well, it'll take you a while. I said, I've read them all already. Then I asked her if she could order me books, and she said, we can't tell anybody. So she started ordering me books from all over the world, and of course, it took a long time to get there. But that's where I got my first real handle, and because I got to read hundreds of books thanks to her.
You must have been a boy genius.
I don't know. I'm just an oddball. I just understood a lot of things. Just came in, and but there was moments that brings it to a real point in reality. One of the first rockets I built.
Solid propellant, by the way.
No, that's old fashioned. this is all liquid propellants, cryogenic fluid.
Wow, at that age, that's amazing.
325 degrees below zero, and so the first one I built was a cryogenic pumper, and my friends, I think I was 9 years old, they're standing by the rocket. And I said, they used to write a little fuse for a bottle rocket. You know, they go, they might just stand there watching it. So, guys, you got to come back up here. You know, we're about 100 yards away. And so I turned on the master switches and sent the power to the rocket. And, Lord have mercy, a fireball about the size of a school bus came out from under the
plane. Oh, my gosh.
And it incinerated the yard about the size of a football field.
Did the rocket take off or blow up?
No, it took off. And I had built some homemade altimeters, and I even had a radio control system I could use. This thing, it clocked out about at apogee. It probably was doing about, I can't really remember, I think it was about 6,000 miles an hour. It broke the sound barrier.
That's amazing. And then you got better and better. You kept building these things as you got older.
Yeah, and my friends used to, well, when I launched that first one, like my mother saw my friends down there by the rocket, and so she was in the house, and everything started shaking when the things leave. It was just thundering, and it was rolling thunder. So she come running out. First thing she asked, where's your friends? She's afraid I incinerate them down there where the rocket was.
Oh, God.
So I turned around and looked. They were standing behind me, and I turned around, and there was nothing. I mean, just a puff, and they were gone. And she asked me, where are they? I said, probably in the next county by now, because they weren't allowed to play with matches.
They took off.
Yeah.
They took off.
I asked my mother, we was watching this rocket thunder out of distance, and It went about an altitude about 10 miles. So,
do we have the kind of propulsion now to do incredible things that we aren't publicly being told about?
I don't know. There sure seems to be more and more evidence piling up that suggests there's some other operation going on. And you got the lunacy of NASA and the government. Let me ask you a question, George.
Yeah.
When you buy a car, would you drive a car, and when it gets down to about 33% usage, would you throw that car into the junkyard?
No.
Right.
No, I would either trade it in or fix it up.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what they did with the space shuttle fleet. The entire fleet had 66% of its life left. Now, explain this to me. We put the entire fleet of mothballs. You have a $150 billion space station, ISS, up there. And now the only way you can get to it...
are the Russians.
Yes, depending on what mood Putin's in.
Yeah.
And explain this. Where is the common...
It doesn't make any sense. We've got to get back into a space program somehow, even if it's private. I don't care. We've got to do it.
They were going to say, it's going to have a private fleet to replace it. I'm looking left, I'm looking right. Do you see a fleet anywhere?
Not yet. No, sir.
And it's going to be years. We see when they simply just shut us down, the government and whoever.
But why? Why?
I don't know. They just don't want us flying. Maybe because we're getting interested in the moon again.
Too close to something, David.
You know, I'm so sick of hearing people, let's go to Mars. Well, sure, you do that, buddy. About 42 million miles, depending on time of orbit, one way. It costs you $500 billion to even get a manned mission like that built up. And here,
and it's a 3-year mission, at least, right?
Exactly. And here you've got the moon, 247,000 miles away, depending on orbit. And it's right there.
Yep.
We've been there 6 times. It's not like we don't know how to do it. Now, however, unfortunately, you can't use any Apollo stuff. All the machines that built the Apollo moon rocket was cut up for scrap.
And we were there with 50-year-old technology, for crying out loud.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'd take that over to stuff today. Why? 50 years ago, I could hurl 450 tons of equipment to the moon with 3 men, out 3 days, 2 days on the moon and 3 days back, and I could do that.
Take that Saturn rocket.
Yeah.
Off you go.
Can't do that anymore because they don't exist. But 50 years ago, they could drop 450 tons of equipment and 3 people on the moon and bring them back home.
We can't do that.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing even close that could do anything like that. So did we go forward in progress with the space program? No, we went flat backwards.
Unbelievable. Well, what else?
The shuttles were gone, and they had an altitude of, I think it was 90 to 690 miles in operational orbits, and now you can't get anything. You can't even get into orbit right now.
No, we can't.
Nothing.
No, that's true. Have to rely on the Chinese one day, too.
Yes, they want to talk to us. But I'll tell you what they're doing. I've worked with some of them. They're on their way to the moon.
In a big way.
Yeah, they're after the Helium 3, and which worked perfect because the Helium 3 would work really well in my fusion containment.
Well, knowing that you never stop working, what are you working on now?
Well... Well, I have my own lab now, and I have live in the mountains of North Carolina, and own about 10 acres, and it's really nice.
How close are you to Asheville?
Yeah, I am 40 minutes away by car.
Well, you got to come see us at our event on August the
27th. I heard you say that, and I thought, dang, I think I have to talk to you a few minutes.
Yeah, I'll have
that.
Tommy call you. At least come by and be one of our invited guests and say hi from the crowd, huh?
God, I would love that. That'd be very cool. Back to your question of what am I doing. Let's see. I got sent. That's 3 things we could talk about. Stuff I sent you on. One of the funnest thing I've ever worked on. It came in a dream, like all the formulas did for the Pislim engine. I call it the gamma ray project, and I don't know if you've ever. the in vitro machine. Northwestern University's working on it, trying to figure out what eggs will fertilize and what
right.
won't.
Okay.
And I sent you some...
Yeah, I've got a whole packet here from you.
Yeah, number 3, big black letters saying gamma ray written on it. Take a look at those photos. Those are photos from the in vitro machine. And what happens is when the sperm enters the egg, I don't know if you knew this, a bright flash occurs because when the sperm enters an egg, it leads to a surge of calcium, which triggers the release of zinc from the egg. And as the zinc shoots out, it binds to small molecules, which emit a fluorescence, which can be picked up by camera and microscopes. In other words, the egg flashes. And whoever flashes the brightest in a tray, those are the ones that you want to try the in vitro process because they have a really excellent chance of fertilizing. If the ones don't flash at all, you just don't bother with them. So I was just watching this, and I was intrigued by what they were doing, and then went home, went to bed, had a drink, and I went, are you kidding? So I called Northwestern back, and I told them what I'm doing, and they went, are you serious? I said, yeah. So what I've done is I've taken an in vitro machine, off-the-shelf device, and I went a step further than they did. I put the in vitro machine inside a cloud chamber. You know what a cloud chamber is?
No, what is that?
Well, you can go to a lot of like Griffin Observatory in L.A.
Are these mock, they make little clouds for demonstration?
Yeah, well, this little cloud does something really cool. It's got a special gas in it, and you'll see these streaks going through the clouds. It's in a big plexiglass box so you can see it really well, and they put it on a big table and set it out in the hallway. And the thing first you notice about, there's no wires, nothing going to this box. So what is all these streaks going through the clouds that's inside the chamber? Well, what they are, they're gamma rays. They're coming through the roof of the building. They're going through the cloud chamber where you see it. They go through the floor and out through the entire earth and out and keep on going. They travel billions of light years, and they're billions of years old. And the gamma rays just travel throughout the universe that way. So what I am been able to do, I got a patent pending on this thing, is that it's just theory, but dang, it's this thing, it's going to let us see something that's going to really be cool. But a woman has sex, and she now has the sperm inside her, and she's walking around, and eventually one of those eggs, a sperm's going to get into that egg. So when it does, there's a flash like you see in the pictures there from Northwestern.
Like a little universe exploding, huh?
Yeah. So let's say she's had a lot of sex and she's hungry, so she walks over to the refrigerator. In that walking, just as that egg is going into that, or that sperm's going into that egg, she walks into the path of a gamma ray particle, and a particle and the sperm both enter the egg at the same exact moment.
And then what happens?
Well, that's where the theory goes into effect. First of all, I'll catch that on camera. So can you imagine what that's going to look like? So I think...
You're going to be able to see conception happen?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Spark of life, creation. You'll have it on film.
Huh.
And then you put the egg back into the host, the woman who gave the egg. She goes full term and has a child, and that's what we want to watch.
You want to watch what happens to the child?
Exactly, because I think, it's just a theory, but I think that will explain why we have Michelangelo's and Einstein's and Hawkins.
I was just going to say that. You may be creating brilliant geniuses. What if it goes the other way, though, David? What if?
Happening? It's happening no matter what we do. It's nature. It's doing it anyhow.
They may be clairvoyant. They may be psychic.
Could be a lot of things. And the siblings are all normal people. But this one sibling in this family is just off the scale. So that could explain why we have, and it's XY base. So that's why we have so many men rather than women. Not saying they're brilliant women, man. There's been a ton of them. They just hadn't been reported. too much because men controlled the recordings of history.
So when does this hit the marketplace?
Well, it's not going to be for sale. It's just for research.
Research.
But, I think I may have figured a way of understanding how we get people like that on that magnitude. And if I could, we get one of these and put them back in and it goes full term, then we'd have our first person to watch. And if they grow up and they are super brilliant.
When might you be testing it?
I've already been on testing for the last couple of years. I was really...
I mean, with actual babies.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, you mean they're born?
No, I would have been already there at that point. But my wife got so sick, and I'm 2 years behind on everything.
Was she a partner with you on this?
She would have been.
Yeah, I see.
All right. That happened, and nothing we could do about it.
All right. Now, you're also working on a Wi-Fi wireless project. What's that all about?
That's another crazy thing. I met this guy years and years ago, and he wanted me to help him tag all of these overseas containers. And I said, yeah, I could help you with that. So it's just a handheld device with a magnet on the back of it. You slam it onto the inside door of a container. And then the container is put on the ship. And when they activate the box as soon as it attaches to the metal door. And that thing could be sitting on that ship in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And if somebody drilled a hole in that thing, we'll know where on that box it drilled it. If they open up the door, we will know all in real time. The signal's transmitted down the ship to a collection antenna, sends it up to the bridge. The bridge then shoots it up through the gateway to the satellite constellation. Then it's transmitted back to wherever your command center is. And in real time, you'll know when somebody's opening the door. And you call the bridge and the captain, and you send people down there and see what's going on. And that's the whole system in a nutshell, and it works. A line of satellites was a real job.
You never stop thinking, do you?
No, it's just constant.
You got a documentary coming out, and I'm told you're working on a music video. You are?
Yeah, that's, I don't even...
You play, sing, dance? What do you do?
Yes. Well, when I asked them, they came to me about this, and I said, you know, what is wrong with you people? Are you on drugs? And they went, no, let's show you what's driving this. I said, oh, well, I'm concerned. He said, are you concerned? Yeah, I'm a pudgy, middle-aged, bald-headed white dude. And you got me in as a lead rapper, singer, and dancer? I said, what is wrong with y'all? So he said, well, come down here and take a look at this. And we had completed the documentary. And that documentary is one everybody's been waiting for.
It took you long enough, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was happy with my wife. I would have just stayed here in the mountains with my lab, and I would have stayed
You
here
were content. Until. Yeah.
I was. I you know, I had a lottery win in marriages. Joanna and I worked together. We were 24/7 for 17 years. You know how many arguments we had? Zero. Not one.
That's because she was going to win them all.
No, it just never came up. It was just like it was like a symbiotic relationship. We just a single organism. But and then she died and just slammed the brakes on everything. But back to that Wi-Fi thing, this is something that affects everybody. This next thing he's doing.
Sounds a little like Tesla technology.
It's Tesla in your pocket. It's what it's going to be. He's got a this Curcio fellow. He has here's the best way I can describe it. It's for about 10 years, Gene's been working on this thing, and it's the next generation of cell phone service. And actually, it's really way more than that. But when compared to conventional big telecom providers, their systems are disruptive technology at its best. So what happens with a person when they get one of these things? Well, what makes this thing so different?
Hold on right there, because we're already at the top of the hour, David. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about Wi-Fi, and also take some calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.